Making after school cool.
Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those who are interested in the activities youth are engaged in during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, the Department of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Mike Wilson. Today begins the first of a series of episodes, which will focus on the influence COVID-19 has had on the citizens of Harris County. Since approximately February of 2020, COVID-19 has impacted every segment of our lives, from education to the economy, employment to food insecurity. This pandemic has changed what we considered our previous normal. Currently, terms such as quarantine, wearing masks, virtual teaching, educational inequities, and work at home has become a common topic of discussion. Research has also indicated that the virus has had different impact on residents based on gender, ethnic group, and household income. As a result, this pandemic has changed the way we operate after school and out of school time activities. To help us get a better understanding of how COVID has changed our lives in Harris County is my guest, Dr. Elizabeth Gregory. Since 1995, Dr. Gregory has been the director of what is now the Institute for Research on Women, Gender, and Sexuality at the University of Houston. Through the support of Friends of Women's Studies, the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies program provides scholarships and fellowships for undergraduate and graduate students, fund a postdoctorate fellowship in women's studies, and awards grants for faculty research. Good morning, Dr. Gregory. Thank you for being my guest on the Making After School Cool podcast. How are you doing today?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing well, Mike. Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. First off, I want to ask you, what initially got you interested in gender studies?
Well, for that, I have to step back a few decades. Basically, gender is everywhere. We like to say life is a gender studies class, and our students come prepared. But it's true, right? Everybody's learning all the time what their gender role is supposed to be. And then as a society, we've been raising questions about those old rules for the past few decades, maybe the past couple hundred years. But really recently, there's been a lot of change around who can do what. Because basically, gender is a work assignment system. If you want to step back from it and think about it theoretically, it sort of tells people what kinds of jobs they're supposed to do in their personal lives and in society. And that has long lined up along, you know, very specific kinds of work, like who takes out the trash and who does the cooking and things like that. But also in the workplace, for a long time, it was certain people were the CEO and certain people were the secretary, that kind of division. And you see similar kinds of division have operated in our society around issues of race and ethnicity. And so there's the same kind of questioning. And when you bring it all together and you talk about intersectional gender, because you can never really separate one person's gender from the rest of their experience. And you talk about like the experience of people in different class positions or people in different ages. So looking at gender is really looking at identity overall. And that's really been in flux. So it's been a fascinating couple of decades. But the first way that I got in here was actually through poetry. So because I'm in my first life, I was, and I still am, an English professor. And I was brought in by a particular poet called Marianne Moore, who was looking at, the way women basically were excluded from poetry as well. That's another work area, or they were only allowed to talk about certain things. So she got very oblique. She would say things. She had to learn to read between the lines to see what she was saying. So that was very exciting for me initially. And then as I got into my job, I realized I became the director of the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies program. So I started looking at other disciplines too, not just poetry, and they all connect, you know. They're all about life. So it's been a really exciting process.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear that you're doing research and you're studying the impact society has on gender. I'm a father of two teenage girls, and so, you know, I definitely want them to live in a world and a society where they feel confident enough to believe that they actually can become what it is that they hope to be as adults. Which leads me to my next question. What is the purpose of the Institute for Research on Women, Gender, and Sexuality at UH?
Before I answer that question, here's a line for your daughters and for everybody's daughters. I have two daughters too. This is a line from one of the poems by this poet. It's called Roses Only. And basically the focus of the poem is on how it's not all about how pretty you are. So the last line of the poem is, your thorns are the best part of you. And so that's maybe a, if you sort of a lesson for girls and boys too, you know. It's your complexity that's interesting, not just your objective.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate you for reciting that. And I'm definitely going to share it with my girls, because there are times, and I guess all of us have these moments of insecurity. And so that definitely is a positive affirmation.
But per your point about the Institute, so here in Texas and, you know, everywhere, but often here in Texas, people talk about gender and sexuality. And not only do they talk about it, but they actually make laws about it, right? But people are enforcing certain attitudes towards gender in various ways and sexuality. And frequently they make those laws on the basis of very little information, right? So if they don't have data, for instance, you may recall there was that big bathroom issue where they were trying to define all these things, and there was no evidence that there had ever been a problem, but they were still making that trying to make laws around people's behavior in that way. And there are many other kinds of restrictions, not necessarily legal, but just sort of built into our assumptions about who will do what and what kinds of wages people make. So basically our purpose is to document what actually is happening in terms of gender and sexuality in our community, and share that data so that people can make informed decisions, both about, you know, knowing what's happening, but also seeing where there are inequities and addressing them.
Now, you also do some research on ethnic groups as well as gender. Can you speak on the impact COVID has had on your students based on gender and ethnic groups?
Well, we have done, we've been tracking the fatality numbers for Houston and Harris County as a kind of measure of how we're doing as a community. And initially, we were brought to that because, you know, around gender, there's a big distinction across the board around the globe where women are dying less than men of COVID. So that was an initial reason to look at that. You know, why is that? And in Houston, so I started looking at the fatality numbers because, first of all, that's the most extreme version of COVID, like who's dying of COVID. But also it's the one that's most reliable, because your death certificate gives you more information that's definite than these tests that they say, you know, basically 50% of the tests that they list on the Harris County dashboard, they can tell you the gender, but they can't tell you the race ethnicity of the person who took the test. So you can't really tell as easily who's being infected, but you can see when they're dying. So that was the most reliable data, let me say, to look at. So in Houston, basically it's about a 60-40 split. So women make up about 38.7% of the people who died in Houston, and men 61.3%. So we were looking at that issue. And then we also were looking at race and ethnicity, because those are both important factors in themselves, and because they are areas in which there has been also a big distinction among the death rates in Houston. And partly you can say, well, you know, that Houston is a very diverse city, so there's going to be maybe a different kind of breakdown than in some other cities, potentially. But when you look at actual mortality rates, there is, you know, where you're looking at deaths per 1,000 people or in the population, you can see a big distinction. So, for instance, here in Houston, if you want to just look at it overall, Hispanics are dying at much greater rates than others, at 8.9 deaths per 10,000 adults, where African Americans are dying at a rate 7.5, and whites at a rate 5.4, and Asians at a rate 4.5. So you can see that there's a big distinction in those groups overall, but when you then break it down by gender, it's even greater. So men are at a much greater disadvantage than women. So you have Hispanic men dying at a rate 11.4, Black men 9.2, White men 6.4, and Asian men 5.7. So again, you can see there's a big distinction. Whereas women also have a differential by race, but it's a much lower rate. So just looking at these issues has been, you know, sort of puts a microscope on, well, first of all, it raises questions. Why is this big distinction? And then what kinds of interventions are possible, if any, at this point, right? So that's a basis for conversation.
Well, it sounds like your research has kind of brought to surface that there are some social factors that COVID has had on our society. How does your work indicate regarding how poverty, household income, and the number of children in the household play a role in gender inequality?
Well, that's slightly off to the side of this, but it's completely related, because in the death rate dynamics, the factors seem to be both sort of the moment, like who's in what jobs and who is, you know, in contact with people and more likely to become ill as a result of that. But then there's also the backstory of who already has underlying conditions that may make them more susceptible to becoming ill and actually dying of the sickness, right? So there's a difference between getting COVID and dying of COVID. And often that is related to underlying conditions as well as age. So just sort of pulling together that nexus, some of it's right, things you could address now by putting people in more safe situations in their jobs. But the backstory of already underlying ill health is harder to address now, right? Because if people are ill, so then you start raising these questions about, well, why are people ill at greater rates in certain groups? And I mean, people already knew this to some degree, but this is just proving it all the more, that people who perhaps don't have access to good healthcare most of the time are, you know, and Texas is the most uninsured state, I believe, in the union. So there are many people here who do not have access to good health care, and that predisposes them to being less well. And, you know, people die younger if their health is not good, you know, in certain groups than others. So that's exacerbated under COVID. We're seeing that happening. But that relates also to just situations of poverty overall that are gendered. And that relates to an earlier report that we did right before COVID in February of 2020, we put out a kind of initial data report on women and gender and sexuality in Harris County and Houston. And the first thing we were looking at was what is women's economic situation, because that's a key to all other factors, right? Like, how are you doing in your health? How are you doing socially, in terms of a group? Frequently is based in the kinds of income you're making so that you have access to services, what kind of services you have access to, because that's the way our society is set up. It doesn't have to be set up that way, but that is the way it operates. So the initial thing we were looking at was who was in poverty, and found that women were 50% more likely to be in poverty than men in Harris County, which is larger than in other major cities. So a larger gap. So we're looking at that, and you know, why is that? And we realized that, you know, there are various factors, and there's not one answer for everybody, but the fact that women make very low wages in Houston relative to other parts of the country is part of it, right? And also the fact that women frequently are supporting children or at much greater rates on their own than men is another factor. So if you have already a low wage and then you're needing to spread that wage farther to accommodate others with less assistance, that's going to just increase the poverty of the family overall, right? So that means a lot of difficulty for women that we developed a term called the gender hardship matrix that just tries to bring to people's attention the way a lot of different factors sort of cascade and compound each other. So if you're caring for kids on your own and you are, that's a time demand, and you have a relatively low wage, not because of your own choice, but because that's the way society has structured it, you're going to be in a much harder situation. And even if you're not on your own, it creates certain kinds of vulnerability that, you know, if you're with someone else and you're dependent, if things are not good in that relationship, just because, for instance, there are a lot of stresses, and COVID, if anything, is stressful, right? Even if you don't have COVID, we're all under stress. It's like a social stress machine that's like pushing us in all the places that we could possibly be pushed, ways that we didn't expect to be pushed ever. So you see people losing jobs, you see people being ill. Worries are another factor, you know, that can fill people's lives with difficulty. Like talking to some single moms in particular, one of the worries that came up was, you know, if I get sick, what happens to my children? And this is not something that they were thinking about before, right? So that adds on another level of trying to protect, be protective. So there's just a big interaction between children, childcare, lack of support largely for childcare, which is huge, and then compounded under COVID when people haven't been able to use what childcare they did have. Low wages. If you're in a dependent situation and there's a lot of stress, that can lead to violence. And then people have to make decisions about whether or not to leave or whether it's better to stay with a little bit of violence rather than to become homeless. You know, these are horrible choices. Build in health issues, depression and anxiety. That's what we're calling the gendered hardship matrix, just because these factors are particularly interactive for women and frequently for mothers.
It's amazing how, you know, COVID, which brought its own difficulties in regards to fatalities and health, how it also brought to surface all these social inequalities that exist that, you know, researchers like yourself, people who work in education, people who interact with a diverse group of people may know a little bit about, but I think it was hard to actually see the significance these differences until something like COVID brought to surface the lack of access that different people in our society have. Finally, I want to ask you, since COVID is such a stressful topic and you've been doing a deep dive on the impact this pandemic has had on Harris County, what is it that you can do to take your mind off of some of these serious issues?
Well, to me, paying attention to them takes my mind off them. It's not that I never sit back and chat with my family and watch movies. I do that. But my attitude is always, if you see a problem, figure it out and fix it. So these are huge problems and they're not going to be fixed. But as a group, I think what COVID does offer us is the opportunity to address these issues that are finally so, you know, stressed and, you know, evident in our society, where up till now people have been able to say, yeah, well, you know, whatever, that's just the way it is. But now you can't say that. You have to look at that and say, okay, we're making choices about the way we invest in education so that people's job opportunities are very different and their access to healthcare is very different. So do we need to move toward a system where everybody just has healthcare? Because on the one hand, you know, that sounds like, oh no, that's dangerous. We're giving things to people who haven't earned it. But if you only want to think about it from a self-interested perspective, you realize in a pandemic that if somebody else is not healthy, then you are at risk. So we are a community. And so the situation of all of us influences everybody else's situation. And as a group, this offers us an opportunity to understand that and to figure out what we're going to do about it. So I think that's the exciting part about it.
Making after school cool.
Well, Dr. Gregory, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast. This is the first of a series of podcasts which will focus on the influence COVID-19 has had on the citizens of Harris County. We will continue this important discussion because the stresses of adults impact the quality of life for children. As always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us. Please join us for future podcasts as we continue to explore issues relevant to the needs of the out-of-school time field.